Hello and welcome to Dad.fm. You're joining Adam, Jeff, and Drew, and we're rapping with you about fatherhood, parenthood, everything dad, entertainment, sports, television, maybe not that much sports, but really everything. Apps, movies, podcasts, we got it all in this roundup, including some toys. All right, so Drew, I know you're a bit under the weather. How is that? Are you like a big baby when you get sick? Like, I know I am the biggest baby when I get sick, like the worst.
No, my wife is very lucky. I am not a big baby at all. I might sound a little sexier this time around because of the voice, that being a little bit deeper. But, you know, I got my Barry White on. No, I'm not really a big baby. I mean, there is some pain with I've got chills and I have neuropathy, and basically what that is nerves dying, and basically what happens is if I like stub my toe or something, it shoots right at my body, and with the cold weather, it's been pretty rough. Sometimes it kind of brings you to your knees, but I'm still not a big baby about it. I did have to go out back in the cold again tonight. I don't know if you caught my update, but I'm a little miffed at the plowing. We had a lot of snow up here, not necessarily a major blizzard or anything, but it was a lot of snow, and I snowblowed about 3 or 4 times, and tonight I had to go back out at 7 o'clock. I snowblow for my neighbor, as he has cancer, and so I don't want him out, doing it. He's a tough old guy too. So kindred spirits.
So he would be out there plowing.
Oh, he's out there. He's out there. I'm like, just give me the blower. Go back inside. I don't want to wound his pride or anything like that. But he knows I think he's happy. He'd rather have me do it than his son-in-law. So or grandson-in-law, I forget. Anyway, but yeah. I'm not really a big baby, but that's not the question. Well, that is the question you asked, but we're also going to talk about some toys and something else, a new show that's coming out, and it's a show for kids, and I think parents are going to like it too. It is a new show on Disney Junior, and it is called Miles from Tomorrowland, and I got to speak with the creator of that show today. His name's Sasha Palladino, and he's worked on shows like Ni Hao Kai Lan and a couple other Henry Huggle Monster, things like that. But the basic premise is that there's a family of four, mom, dad, daughter, and son, that are working for the Tomorrowland Transit Authority, and they are trying to connect the galaxies and connect people. So they have this mission to go out and connect with people. The mother, Phoebe, is it's the Callisto family. The mom, Phoebe, is the captain. The dad, Leo, is the mechanic and the ship's pilot. And then daughter, Loretta, is she's like a genius with mechanics and such. And son, Miles, he's like an all-around kid who he's smart. He thinks outside the box. He thinks on his feet. And then they're also joined by his robot ostrich named Merc. It is
another robot ostrich show. Jeez.
Yeah. Just you can't get it. Swing a stick at him and you'll hit one. Yeah. But I liked it a lot because it doesn't dumb down the parents. That the parents are not like foils. Everyone in the family is an equal part of this team. And it's because they're in space, and there are dangers in space, and they have to rely on each other not only as a family but as a crew. And it's something I picked up right away watching a couple of the episodes. There's one that you can watch on Watch Disney Junior, there's another one that they sent me to check out.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, it's a cute one. Both the kids were really interested in it. They enjoyed it very much. My daughter made sure that I asked the question, why a robot ostrich, and which I did. And the ostrich is, underrepresented on TV. Can you believe that?
Well, that's true. That's true. It is the diversity of animals could use some work. Yeah. What do you think about it? It seems like there's a just an abundance of science, robot, STEM-y shows. I mean, I think that's a good thing. Do you think networks are just kind of going just all in, just pushing all their chips into the table on that at this point? And will that eventually hurt? Is there a downside to that?
Well, I mean, if the science is solid, then I don't think so. Nice with this show is that there are people on it who are in the sciences, as well as a lot of people who are also in a lot of sci-fi. You've got Bill Nye, the science guy. You've got Alton Brown. He's a guest star once in a while. Will Wheaton, George Takei. There's a large list. I did ask him if I said, you know, I'd really love it if you pulled back this group of kind of rogues one of the captain of that ship, he's also part of the ABC family, you know, Firefly. I'd love to, you know, because a lot of those folks do voice acting, and they've lent their voices to a number of projects. It would just be so funny if they were like, you know, went somewhere and there was the like crew of the Firefly. Serenity. Oh my God. Flog me. It's gotta be the meds.
I'm broke right now.
You would have never, I would have just been chuckling alive. I'm so vaguely unfamiliar with what you're actually talking about, which is something I'm going to bring up when I get into what I want to talk about. I will touch on how I have no idea what you were just saying again.
Well, and the other thing, you did bring up STEM. I got the opportunity to review a toy called the Ozobot, and it is a little robot that follows a trail. So you can actually draw with a marker and it will follow the trail, and then there are different lines of color codes that you could put down. So you could use a black marker for the trail, a blue, black, blue to make it turn left or right, or you know, any number of different things. It works not only with pen and marker and paper, but it also works on apps like on the iPad. It is a fun little program and a fun little toy. It's just these little tiny little robots. I have a post about it on my blog. It is a sponsored post because they did send it to me to review. And I actually had another set of them. They're great for kind of teaching kids a bit about coding and logic without them really knowing it. So
okay, very nice. You're going to be writing about that for Cooper and Kid as well, working that into a toy, some toy coverage on there?
I may. I, you know, when I try to come up with an idea at the last minute, like that entire Amiibo post.
You and me both. I got to read that. I don't understand what Nintendo did there. I'm going to preface what I'm about to say by saying I don't. While I'm an entertainment writer, I don't have my finger on the pulse of technology, as you guys both well know. And anybody who's probably listened to the first two episodes probably could surmise that I don't have my finger on the pulse of what's new in technology. But has there been a less marketed, promoted, hyped launch from a major toy brand than Nintendo's thing I can't exactly pronounce? I mean, you know, Skylanders, you knew when it's coming out. Infinity, you knew when it was coming out. This thing, it just sort of, it looks like it just showed up. At least that's the way it looks like from an outsider.
I will say this, is that I've been in the Nintendo world since I'm a little kid. I've been a Super Nintendo, Nintendo NES. That's when I started, it was NES, and then got into Super Nintendo. I've been in this circle now for a dozen, you know, half dozen iterations of systems, GameCube, everything. I would say that from, you know, I know the head of the PR that runs this, and I've talked to him about this campaign. I don't understand where the outreach is, and I think because we're all dad bloggers, we don't see that outreach. This was, and I've talked to now people at GameStop managers and you know, kind of manager level at the stores, and they say it's a huge hit. And they don't understand where all the disrespect is, because everyone comes in making fun of it if you're a Skylander fan. But to be honest, I think what they did at Nintendo is brilliantly smart, which is they're not doing this where there's a, like, it's ultra collectible. Like, they made Wave 1. Characters from Wave 1 are already selling at $100, and they're now only on to Wave 4. And oh, wow. So what they really did was they took their core audience, and they said, give us your top 50 characters. We're going to put them out in waves, and from the most desirable, Mario, Link, we're going to put them out in Wave 1, and then we're going to slowly turn off that pipe. So the only people that are going to have them are super fans of Nintendo. And so there's a lot of things coming down the pike that I actually just signed an NDA recently about that I can't talk about. But we could use the Amiibo figures right now on the Wii. And Nintendo has this other great platform, and you might one day be able to use them on that. So just kind of imagine what's coming out, because I can't say any names of anything. But I really do believe that in our realm, we don't see that marketing. We're not seeing that PR. But if you go to the Nintendo store, it's plastered all over the place. You go to some of the toy stores, GameStop, Toys R Us, Target. It's a much smaller footprint because it is a year one release. And so everyone's kind of like, they don't want to give the shelf space to it. But I think if Nintendo does it right, it could have legs. I think Nintendo's biggest problem with this platform, whereas with, you know, with Disney Infinity that is going to have a major announcement tomorrow, with Skylanders, those are both cross-platforms. They play on everything. I think Nintendo's problem is that it only plays on Nintendo. And I think until they resolve that, they are going to always seem like they're behind the eight ball. But in truth, I think they're doing fantastically well with the numbers. I don't think anyone's talking about that.
Oh, okay. See, to me, like, I don't really understand it. Like, I understand Skylanders and Infinity because there's a game. Like, there's a starter kit. There's a little disc that you put into your little machine and something comes up and you use the figures in it. I've stood in front of the display in Target because, my daughter likes... daughters like Zelda and like Mario, and I don't understand, just looking at it, what I do with it. I don't have no idea.
Right, and I think that goes back to, once again, that Nintendo I think the problem with Nintendo is that they introduced the Wii, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and they stopped communicating with everything since. Like, the Wii U is awesome because it has the on-screen thing, and the best thing I like about the Wii U is you don't have to hook it up to a TV. So if you want to just leave it as a standalone little gamepad that my kid could play in the corner, like, before I really trusted him with a full iPad, he could have. Like, if you don't trust your kid with an iPad, you could give him a Nintendo, and he could play that great console and some games, and you could, do a Gamefly membership and have unlimited Nintendo Wii games. But I really think that you're right. There is no core game to this yet. And I say that yet, but this is really based about Smash Brothers, those kind of, there will be an iteration of Mario Kart where you touch the Amiibo figure to it, and there's your character all leveled up with all his perks with his pimped out Mario Kart. And I think that's the traction they're going on. This isn't the short-term play that everyone's looking at. It is like, oh, well, compared to Skylanders, it's done nothing. I love Skylanders.
Okay.
I have a few thousand dollars worth of Skylanders, and I keep investing more. As we as we all found out today, there's a new Skylander coming out this week called Love Potion.
I'm so unexcited about that. Can they do what? Stop with the pop fist. Just stop. Like, can we get a variant of a different character? I mean, yeah, he's cute looking, but like, I feel like there's been 14 different pop fizzes. Yeah, and I know Drew's gonna buy them, but I don't like having different versions of the same people. That bugs the heck out. I have two Chop Chops and two Stealth Elves because they are by far my favorite characters of that game or of any game I've ever played. But I don't like just a different color of some dude who had a different color last year. Anyway,
I'm okay with the variants as long as they're in-game variants. Like, there's a there's a clear Tough Luck that I've been hunting for. And I can't even figure out what stores have it and what stores don't have it. I just know that it's out there and it's $100 on eBay.
That's, and that she's clear in the
yeah,
game?
She's fully clear.
No, in the game, she shows up as her normal paint job.
Oh, right, but the figure is just clear. You don't get anything special from it. It's just a chase variant, like the Swap Force ones last year that were metallic, different tops and bottoms, like a gold and a silver.
Okay.
You know, it's just
I generally ignore that if it's not different in the game. I like you know whatever. I'm not collecting them here, so I like the
we
ones
know that.
That are,
but Drew, on the other hand, is going to take this very personally in a second.
we've talked about that.
I don't go after those chase variants most of the time. If I see it, sure, I'll pick it up. But if I'm not go out looking from store to store, I've stopped doing that. I don't really go look store to store. I'll get. Love Potion Pop Fizz because he's everywhere. He'll be everywhere for a while. It's just another one. And Pop Fizz is one of my favorite characters. And well,
who does the voice? Bobcat.
Bobcat Goldthwait. Yeah.
Come on, how do you not love that voice?
I mean, and it's his Police Academy voice. I mean, it's great. It's his One Crazy Summer voice. It's you know I've enjoyed him for years. You know, and now he's like an accomplished director, and you know, but still hearing that voice and that character going nuts is just brings me back.
Yeah, it's like watching Booger now in Supernatural.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think Amiibo is going to have legs, but I think you have to look at this is their long term thing. This isn't a short flash in the pan. I think it could have been a flash in the pan if no one bought it. But I do think they actually got super, like the Nintendo fans, the Nintendo hardcores have bought into it. And I think that's all that they wanted to see was that validation.
Oh, okay.
And they made those figures incredibly collectible, especially because you can't find them. You know, you can't find them anywhere. Like certain characters, like I loved Kid Icarus when I was a kid, and I can't find Pit. Because he was retired.
Pitt's already retired. He's going for $100 on eBay, $150. Right. Same with Little Mac from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Yeah, he came out in November. That's right. Ridiculous.
That is cool. I mean, if a big brand like that is going to go for something that is intentionally not going to be mass-produced, like that's a neat decision and something I actually applaud. Because I feel like you don't see that a whole lot. You know, a big brand like that is going to want to just grab as much money as possible for as long as possible. But to intentionally go in with the idea that these are going to be truly collectible, all of them, in each stage, not just one, having one that's harder to find.
Well, I think they have a couple of characters that they decided that were going to be like the chases. Like, you know, I think Pitt is. Little Mac is certainly now. I think that along the line, you'll find Zelda is harder to find. I think some characters like Princess Peach, you'll find everywhere. I think I think Kirby is going to be all over the place. I think it'll be hard to find Wario when he comes out. I think it'll be hard to find Mario in a year. I think they will do something about a promo with Mario, and then you won't find him anymore, and that's it. I think Wario will be a chase.
Yeah, they already have another Mario coming with Mario Party 10, and... I did a little research for the post over on Cooper and Kid, which talks a lot about different things here. The only one that I have that you can't find anywhere is Star Fox. So you can't find Fox anywhere, and I got that because I bought the loot crate for it. But Mario, you're gonna have a couple of different versions of Mario. You've got his Super Smash Brothers version. You got his Mario Party version.
I want the one that he's in the raccoon suit from Super Mario 3.
Yeah, nice. You can unlock him in Mario Kart 8. If you buy the downloadable pack for the Link downloadable pack, the Legend of Zelda one. Yeah, and you can play him.
So. I need that.
Just let me know when to tap back into this podcast. I will
yeah, well, I think right, probably right,
so
now.
Let's move it right along.
Yeah.
Well, actually, because this sort of blends in, if you don't mind, this sort of actually goes with. I wanted to talk to you guys about podcasts because, you know, not to be like all meta or wheels within wheels here, but I am sort of a. I don't want to say I'm a podcast addict, although that is actually the name of one of the apps I use to listen to podcasts. But. I grew up a music discoverer. I just loved the hunt for new music, new bands that just formed, bands that haven't even formed yet. I loved finding music like that. And I don't do it as much anymore. It's harder for me to do that anymore with music, but I'm still out there. But it podcasts have sort of replaced that. The joy of finding a podcast that and I don't know if people like if and nobody has heard of it or not, but just for me personally, it was never about that, like being the first one. It was just even with music, it was about just finding something that I can just sort of lose myself in and just become a little bit, as much as I am a fanboy of anything, which is not a whole lot, but so I wanted to talk to you guys about what podcasts you guys, if you guys listen to them, and which ones you like and why. And I wanted to tell you a few of the ones that I'm that could recommend for different reasons.
All right, so I guess we all listen to Serial, right? Has everyone listened to
Serial? I never have.
I have no idea who really? You are talking about.
Oh, good, okay. So Serial is following, like, kind of like...
It's, I mean, I know what it is.
Okay,
I'm just,
I'll explain it to the listeners for the first time. If you are totally not in the podcasting realm of marketing, if you don't read Entertainment Weekly, then Serial was a case down in Baltimore that was a real-life case that was kind of... done as a podcast, as a 2020 a Dateline mystery kind of thing, where they kind of read through the case, they talked about it, and then now in real life it's actually having some repercussions to the actual case, talking about the detectives and the ineptitude and evidence handling. So we, you know, some entertainment now actually might bleed into real life by giving the guy another trial because of the pressure now put on the DA's office and the judges and you know the appellate courts down there in Baltimore. But that's kind of really, in the last several months, that's the only thing in terms of podcasting that you've heard other than Mark Maron's WTF podcast. That has a lot of PR behind it. And because, you know, I listened to Gilbert Godfrey, he's got a great podcast that gets mentioned all the time in the media too. Outside of those three, I have never really heard of mainstream podcasts be talked about outside of the celebrity themselves talking about, like Adam Carolla always talks about his podcast wherever he is, you know.
Right.
But that's it. Like, it's the Adam Carolla podcast, and that's awesome. I do know when I was listening to Opie and Anthony on the radio, and Anthony got kicked off because of whatever happened in Times Square, I know he was talking about how he was going to go make his own flag as a podcast network. And I guess that's very big in the comedian world, that instead of just doing stand-up Monday on Friday and Saturday nights, or Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights, that you're then doing a podcast on the side, and you're making your brand, right, and you're getting your listeners involved. So I guess that's in that realm of comedy. So, Jeff, why don't you tell us what you're listening to, and then we'll kick it, and I'll tell you what I'm listening to in a minute.
Okay, so I listen to a lot. In my mind, it's a lot. So there's the, right off the bat, The Life of Dad has a trilogy, the trident of a podcast on their network. One is called, now they're good friends of mine. I write a column for them.
And they're good friends. They're good friends of ours, because if you actually want to find Dad.fm, you can find it on the Life of Dad network. We're syndicated there too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and so my two podcasts are as well. My OWTK radio show and the Kids Music Monthly podcasts are on their network. But they're actual kind of in-house content. Well, I don't know how to say that. The ones that they make. There's the Life of Dad show, which is a celebrity interview show. Athletes, actors, people you've heard of. Danny Trejo, Victor Cruz from the New York Giants. They pull some really big guests in and talk about dads. It's all dads talking about fatherhood and their art and how it impacts or does not impact them as dads. And then there's the Life of Dad after show, which I've been on a couple of times. That is a tremendous show. It focuses just on dad bloggers, so talking to all of our peers about what they do, how they got started, what they're into. Very, very cool show. And then why I was saying that I will once again bring up that I don't understand a lot of what you guys talk about here on this show is the new Life of Dad show. It is called Nerds, Geeks, Dads. And it is co-hosted by Zach Rosenberg from 8-Bit Dad, who is a super geek. And it is everything that you guys would probably love that I've never listened to it because I'm like, I don't even know. I probably should because I love Art Eddy from Life of Dad and I love Zach, but I don't know if I would get anything that these guys are talking about. If it's like obscure, like Star Fox, I don't even know what that means. You were just talking about that a little while ago. I played Zelda as a kid, and so I know Link and the other one or whatever. But so that, I love the Life of Dad podcast. But there are a couple that I am just head over heels about. I mean, there's a soccer one, European football called Men in Blazers. Love those two dudes from England. They live in America now. Canadian Dad up in Chris Reed, our buddy Chris Reed. He's got a pair of podcasts, the Canadian Dad podcast. And he also has Creative Minds that he does with another Canadian blogger named Mike Reynolds. Just a fascinating. I love shows that get at the process, especially when it's what I like about WTF when he it's. I've been listening to that for like the last 300 episodes, and it's really evolved to not being so self-indulgent and really getting into the guest's process and where they came from and the origin story of how they began making art or telling jokes or acting or whatever, making films, whatever it is. And the Creative Minds podcast really gets at that with a lot of really interesting people. The Frame, probably my favorite podcast, my favorite daily podcast right now, is called The Frame. It is out of KPCC in Southern California. It is a daily 24 minute show, art and entertainment and culture. So they all week and all last week they've been doing stuff that's live from Sundance, talking about some films there, talking about art galleries in Los Angeles. I absolutely adore it. I absolutely love that show. And that is one it's small. I mean, they have like 400 people following them on Twitter. It is still a small show, but it's terrific. So well done. And finally, just, I guess I'll bring up one more. 99% Invisible. It's a show that's into, what do they have? Like 150th episode just went up today. And it's a weekly show, but I just discovered it. And it is, again, it's about origin stories. It's only about 15 to 20 minutes each show, and it is about a singular thing. One episode, and my daughter Julie started listening to it as well. She's almost 11, and she's fascinated by it. I put it on her phone, and one episode, like for example, is called Penn Station Sucks, and it's just about, it's about the history of Penn Station, just in itself, how it started, how it used to be as beautiful as Grand Central, but then due to some laws in New York City, changed things, it was demolished, and now it's just a rat's nest, and it's gross to be in, even though it serves so many millions of people.
I could tell you that. I could also tell you that there's big plans to move it across the street into the postal library that is as gorgeous as it could possibly be.
Yeah, that would be so cool. But yeah, so that's it. 99% Invisible is a really, really fascinating show. But The Sizzle was one recent episode just talking about Chili's and the fact that the sound can be copyrighted in very few instances, but that sound changes our emotions and our habits, and how Chili's figured that out back before it was a huge national chain serving fajitas, and that the sound actually sells the product more than the waiters, more than the menu itself, is that when somebody orders it, all of a sudden, people around them at other tables start ordering it because of that sound. Just fascinating. Just really fascinating. It's so up my alley. Little niche things like that. So that's what I listen to every day. You guys?
Well, I will sit there and rattle off some that I have on the subscribe button. For me, I love the Freakonomics podcast. I think, Freakonomics was a book that really made me see things in a different light. It was one of the first kind of intros into a marketing kind of book that I was really reading when I got into this whole space. So to me, the Freakonomics podcast is awesome. I also really like the Startup podcast, which is kind of like, kind of imagine Shark Tank in a different look. That's a really good podcast I really enjoy. From the other day, I was checking out some parenting podcasts to see, hey, look, we're in this parenting niche. what other ones are out there. So I found one, and I listened to a couple episodes from it, which is by WNYC. It's called The Longest Shortest Time. And it's, you know, like when you think about parenthood, it is the longest time, but really in reality it is so short, the time that we have with our kids before then they sit there and be like, I don't like you anymore. So I find that, I found it to be a really interesting time. They just released the Parents Guide to Doing It. And I will say it was super not safe for work. It definitely rang my ear bells the wrong way. It was super dirty and did not give me any advice I could take back and put to practical use with my wife. So I will say that from a dad standpoint, it did nothing for me. In terms of some friends I've been that have podcasts, my friend over at Late Night Parents, Ted Hicks, started a podcast called Late Night Parents. He kind of reprised something that me and my other co-host had done about doing a parenting podcast. His take on it is very different. So it's more of a dad's perspective. It's a single talk, but you can always find him at lnp.tv, and that's Late Night Parents. And then my old co-host from Late Night Parents actually spun off and has changed his whole dynamic of life, and now he is a big self-change, self-motivation, changing the perspective of how you look at yourself and how you look at the world. And so Josh Becker started I Simply Am. So it's isimply.am. And he is, under iTunes, he's like one of the top 10 self-help podcasts, which is incredible for that. So I've listened to a couple of him. I will say as a New Yorker, I have nothing. I have nothing that I could sit there and tangibly say this reflects on me and this does it for me as a New Yorker. To me, this is the New Yorker looking at California being like, this is California. This is what it means. This is some of the stuff that he's talking about in this podcast, I know is probably universal, but it's so California to me. It's like, you know, it's like when my cousins moved from Florida to California and they both drank that California Kool-Aid and they're totally like, yeah, man, just like, you know, meditate and zen on it. And I'm like, no. I just need to keep working. I need to get to the next dollar. I need to get to the next thing. It's time to go. So a true New Yorker in me is just like, this is so beyond me. But highly recommend it if you want to learn about that. And those are kind of like the podcasts I've been into. I do stray from podcast to podcast from time to time. I do try to listen to new things. I will agree with you, Jeff, that Life of Dad has done some phenomenal podcasts. I also listen to the NYC Dads Group podcast because they do a good job of putting on some things for dads.
I was just on. I just recorded one with them today. We interviewed Ron Lieber, New York Times personal finance columnist, about his new book. I've co-hosted. This will be the second or third. One. Yeah, they do a fantastic job. That's the Modern Dads podcast.
So Jeff, where do you get the time? Like, because I'm doing this, and I'm just like, man, this is taking a lot of time in my life.
I think we've talked about before. I have so much time. I waste more time than I should watching soccer during the day with my cats and just hanging out here.
Really, we should just record this during the day. Right.
I'm definitely more of a day person. I'm up early and I'm like motivated, and by 9-10 o'clock I'm just like scrolling through Twitter and just laying in bed and just zoning out. Yeah, it's I'm not usually at my best at 10 o'clock at night.
See,
that's
and
for
to
sure.
Me, this is like my peak, because by like somewhere between 7 a.m. and noon, I could use cat naps and I could just pass out in any position, eyes roll back, I'm snoring. But like then around noon, I start to wake up, and then by like 2 and 3 in the afternoon, I'm like moving and grooving. By 10 p.m., I'm in like prime. Wow. That's my stride.
Oh my gosh!
Then I
keep
going
like
to like 1 and 2 in the morning. So
wow, yeah, that's the polar opposite. I mean, by two in the afternoon, I'm dozing off. I'm up. I'm at the gym. I come back. I'm like raring to go. That's when I record my podcast. I do most of my writing, and then it's just all downhill from there. It is just like struggling to stay awake until at least it's dark out, so I don't feel that pathetic.
All right. And Drew, do you listen to any podcasts these days?
I do. I was listening to a lot more, but now I'm down to one. And the reason I'm down to one, but and
is
this
is the
is
one
a,
to control them all. Like, how does that
happen? This one would melt Jeff's ears and his sensibilities. Jeff, if you listen to even the opening of this show, you would be so turned off.
Now you're I'm tempted now.
I'm telling you, it's not for everybody, and I don't think it's for you. It's called The 40-Year-Old Boy, and it is a comedian. His name is Mike Schmidt. He is out in California, and he pretty much tells stories about his life, and the amount of language in it is like unbelievable. It is definitely not safe for work. He has a different opening every year, so he's we're on, I think, year 7 right now, and every year his opening is brand new. He has a friend who actually does all the artwork. He does a special artwork for every single episode based upon what he talks about. He also does an interlude every year. So it's a musical episode about the things that he said throughout the year. The music is you know, his friend who does the music is really good, but I didn't have my headphones in one day at work, and I turned it on by accident, and it definitely got quite a few heads turning at me. yeah, so immediately it's pretty rough. I've actually met him in person. I paid a Kickstarter so that I could have dinner with him when he came out to Boston to do a show. I don't know. I had some money at the time, and I paid to have him come. And I actually have a watercolor done by his buddy that he and I jumping up and down a wet cement as little kids. And it's interesting to see where he's come, how far he's come in the past 7 years. You know, he had been a writer on different shows. He was in the movie Basketball. He was 500 pounds at the time. He was a really, really big guy. He's now down. He's in the two bills, I think, right now. Wow. And he's been working very hard, but at the same time, he continually messes up his life, and he talks about it. So there is a lot of heartfeltness to it. If you can get past all the language, and I'm telling you, Jeff, it'll melt your ears.
So why don't you think I have like a sailor's mouth. Why do you think
you,
I can't handle
you
language?
Do?
I
don't think
I literally
you swear
can't.
At all.
Wow. You could ask my kids about that. They would probably be laughing at that. No,
that's a topic for a whole other podcast. Ethan.
Oh, it was under the impression language. That you were not
I can barely get through a sentence sometimes.
Oh, well, okay.
Welcome.
Although
I've never
cursed in front of my parents.
Okay.
Somehow I managed to do that. And I keep it clean on my kids' music podcast. But otherwise,
I would hope so.
Yeah.
We try to do a good job. We're not blatant in this podcast. I think we might have dropped one here and there, but I'm still feeling this as clean, you know.
I think the reason this podcast attracts me so much is that I don't do anything too crazy in my life, and I don't rage and you know, but I have that internal not happy about certain things, and listening to him actually kind of calms me down because he's so angry.
Oh wow!
So, yeah,
despite all that rage, I'm still a rat in the cage.
But I was under the wrong impression, Jeff. I really thought. I didn't realize you had to say this.
I just project that good, wholesome Midwestern boy.
Yeah. Okay.
But inside, I'm just a giant.
Well, then I don't have to watch my mouth around you late now.
Oh, my God, no. In fact, I can't believe in the conversation that we've had, I can't believe I have made them through without saying anything or cursing. Yeah, that's surprising. Very surprising. I don't like to do it. We actually should talk about that in one episode.
Yeah,
that'd
we will. That'll be a good topic. Cursing with the kids. That'll be more of a parenting episode than an entertainment episode.
Yeah.
Drew, what were some of the other podcasts that you were listening to? Anything that worth mentioning?
I used to listen to Comedy Film Nerds. and you know, just follow behind. And I am a completist, so I need to listen to a podcast from the beginning. So I was listening to that. I was listening to WTF, and that just fell out of favor with me. I couldn't take any more of the navel gazing, which wasn't interesting to me at all. Like, just the I couldn't take it anymore.
You know, it's funny, Drew. I had the same. So I'd been listening to that for a long time, and I got tired of it because of that. But then it's really changed. Like, he has become much more. I mean, there's still the opening monologue, which, I mean, you can just blow through. But, you know, he's had on guests like Richard Linklater, which I need to talk to you about, Adam, from the director of Boyhood. Paul Thomas Anderson, my favorite director, Boogie Nights, Inherent Vice, and lots of other good things.
As I said, when you look at podcasts, his name comes up as like one of the oldest.
Oh, he's the biggest.
Right. So, you know, like, he's getting a lot more guests now as podcasting has become something like the celebrities now hit.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. His Robin Williams episode was incredible, but he's become better at really focusing on the person and diving and letting them just kind of go and prodding them and getting a lot about their process. And I mean, he still has his Lorne Michael fetish where he has to ask everybody who's had any sort of tangential relationship to Saturday Night Live because of his not getting on that show however many years ago. But I came back to it eventually, and it's much, much better from that standpoint.
Well, I'd have a lot
much more about the person than him.
I'd have a lot to catch up on if I was to do that. I was also listening to The Nerdist, but that was like three times a week, and I couldn't keep up with that either. So
there's one that I tried that once. I'm like, that's a podcast that's not for me.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening at all in that show.
Well, I mean, I sometimes will pull different guests and listen to it if I want to hear what one of the certain guests have to say. So in that one, you know, you don't necessarily have to listen to that in order at all. But I used to listen to a couple other ones. There was a guy, his name is Ron Algar Watt. I forget the name of his podcast now. It was he and a friend, and it was a comedy podcast. Then it turned into kind of like a sketch comedy podcast. He actually did... it's a series of videos on YouTube called Algar Lovingly Reviews the Transformers. And so he did old Transformers episodes, episode by episode, in a very loving yet, you know, that he enjoyed it, but at the same time just lambasted the heck out of it. And then he started on G.I. Joe. So they're really good.
Yeah. All right, well... Switching up the gear a little bit here. There's some awesome entertainment casting news, and I felt like we should talk about this a little bit. So I know
we want to. Drew, I know you're under the way. Do you want to bail and just let Adam and I finish this, or how are you feeling?
I'm good for a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think this is a good one for you, Drew, Jeff and Drew. So let's talk about a moment here about the announcement that Ghostbusters is going to have an all-female cast, and it's going to include Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Leslie Jones, and Kate McKinnon. And if you don't know the last two names, these are the two latest additions to Saturday Night Live. So to me, it's really interesting that most of them have a Saturday Night Live past, other than Melissa McCarthy. But she's been on it as a guest star, a guest host. But what do you think of this cast? What do we even think about the fact that they're going with an all-female cast for the reboot?
I think, you know, it's an interesting take. I think it'll be good, you know, to see something different. I know that everybody that I had ever talked to was big into Bridesmaids, thought it was like incredible. But I think I watched it at the wrong time and it didn't really do a lot for me. Melissa McCarthy, I enjoy sometimes, but she seems a little bit overdone. I don't know the other two. I don't watch Saturday Night Live anymore. Way up too late for me. I catch sometimes when they have a good skit, and that's few and far between that it gets up there that I can see it. So, you know, it might be interesting. I heard it's going to be more scary, less, you know, it'll be comedy, but there'll be more scare factor to it. You know, it sounds interesting.
I and this probably won't surprise you, I mean, I saw Ghostbusters when I was younger, but...
Oh, no, say it ain't so.
Oh, come on.
You're turning to Butterman?
No, I'm serious. Like, I don't really have a personal relationship with that movie. So I come about this from an entertainment standpoint. I don't like reboots. I like original ideas. I don't want to see something just redone. Anything that goes across the board, it just kind of bugs me. I like original ideas and original narrative, and the fact that it's all women. I mean, I don't know. I have not been keeping up. I saw the news today, and I saw a wig and McCarthy's name attached to it. And I mean, I heard that it was rumored to be happening, but I don't understand why necessarily. Like, do you need to remake something that Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd were in? Is that necessary? I don't know. To me personally, I don't actually have. I'm sorry to disappoint, but I don't really have that strong of an opinion on it, one way or the other.
Okay.
I probably wouldn't see it or rush out to see it. I'm sure there's some smaller budget, interesting original idea that I'd rather movie that would come out at the same week that I'd rather go if I'm going to go pay $12.50 or whenever that comes out, whatever movies are up to by that time, what it's going to cost. I'd rather go see something else, probably.
So I am a purist in this sense. I really love the original ones. I was attached to it. To me, it's sacrilege almost. I really kind of help. I hope that it would be a reboot that I could really enjoy. I hope so. I didn't really enjoy Bridesmaids. I know it was funny. I got the humor in it, but it was like, you know, it was like watching another movie that had been redone by another cast of all females. And it's not about the sexism. Don't get me wrong. I love female characters. I love strong female characters. I love them as leading ladies. It's just that, to me, I was a true Ghostbuster purist. I was really hoping that it was going to be like Bill Murray sitting in the firehouse, and all of a sudden all heck breaks loose in New York, and he has to go out and recruit the next crop, you know, the next wave of Ghostbusters. So I was hoping that it would be a different twist. All right. Other casting news, and I know Jeff is super excited about this. Going into Netflix's Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh, yeah. See, that's more my speed.
All right. So we know that they have the original actors, Amy Poehler, Elizabeth Banks, Janine Garofalo, Christopher Maloney, David Hyde Pierce, John Benjamin, Paul Rudd, Michael Ian Black, and Bradley Cooper are all signed on, right? So now here's news that apparently the series is also going to feature some guest stars of Chris Pine, John Hamm, Kristen Wiig, and Jason Schwartzman are going to have reoccurring guest roles. And to me, I think this is just, I don't know how Netflix is doing it, but I think this is the creme de la creme of modern day actors that have been on our TV sets for years and in some movies. And I'm really excited about this reboot.
So am I. Holy crap, that's such a great movie. I can't believe how interesting the television landscape is. I mean, I don't want to say it's the golden age of TV because I'm not a TV historian, but what's happening right now with both Amazon and Netflix producing amazing content and the cable, the whatever they call HBO, the pay cable channels or the high end, whatever that's called, the Showtimes of the world, just making such intense and complicated and ambitious dramas and comedies. It's amazing. And getting the quality of actor. You know, I thought reality TV, which I've never seen a single episode of any reality television show except the old original Real World on MTV back when it was like actually interesting way, way many years ago.
When they were actually producing Real World guys like The Miz to then go have a WWE fantasy life afterwards?
No, I don't know who that is. I'm talking like way San Francisco, like way the original one, original. 20 years ago. I've never seen an episode of any singing contest, dancing contest, or any reality TV, but I thought reality TV was going to kill television. Like, just murder it. Look for murder, actual scripted, interesting narrative television. And maybe it did on the networks, and it's, but it's alive and well, and it's so exciting. I mean, Bradley, that cast is ridiculous. For 8 episodes? I mean, I don't know how much money is involved, or if these people are just working for minimums, or whatever the term, scale, whatever the term is in the entertainment business. In the sports business, it would, you know, be league minimum. I don't know. I don't understand the economics of it, but it's super exciting to see the kind of talent that's popping up. You know, like the True Detective, getting McConaughey and Harrelson, and whoever's in episode, in season two, which is two, Colin Firth, I think, and somebody else interesting. Getting these, like, movie star dudes and ladies to be on television is really cool. And the writing and the directing, it's amazing. And I've never been a TV guy, but it actually is, I'm much more of a film guy. But it's making me want to subscribe to Netflix and want to DVR, like we talked about, Togetherness, which, by the way, 3 episodes in, it's getting better. That's a good show. I've decided that Togetherness is a really, for half hour, you know, sitcom format, time length, it's a really interesting show.
Well, in terms of TV, tonight's the last night of Parenthood, and I don't know if you've watched that. It is totally a tearjerker. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And so if you haven't watched it, I'm not going to give you any spoilers. It's totally worth picking up. I think it's on Hulu. I think you can find it on Amazon. I think you can find it on Netflix. I think you can find it all over the place. iTunes.
Yeah.
It's totally a series worth watching. That's for sure. It comes from the same creative team that did Friday Night Lights, the TV show. And I thought Friday Night Lights was one of the best TV shows on television for that period of time. And that was really when Netflix was still incubating its own original programming. Same with Amazon. They both were toying with the idea or producing it. But Friday Night Lights really changed my opinion of television the same way that years earlier Rescue Me on FX did. Like, it was a groundbreaking show, the way it was done, everything about it. So that's what I think.
But yeah, I want to talk about Parenthood, but I want to, Drew, I know you're struggling. Let me let's say goodbye to Drew tonight and wish him good health real
thank
soon.
You.
Yeah, get the better soon, man.
Thank you. The only casting news I wanted to bring up is Emma Watson as Belle.
Oh, Belle. Hermione is a Disney princess. My head almost exploded when I saw that. I mean, great casting. Holy
yeah, God. I'm excited for that.
Talking on another page of Disney eyeing news and casting news, Deadline.com is talking about how Disney's eyeing Chris Pratt for Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah, is that guy going to play every, like, action hero from now on?
I got to tell you, if he plays Star-Lord in Indiana Jones, I am totally happy. He's totally okay in my book. I think he pulls it off nicely, and I could definitely see him wearing a, you know, brown fedora hat, trucking around the mud.
Oh, in fact, Star-Lord sort of had a little Indiana Jones. I got that vibe just
certainly.
In that open. So it totally makes sense. It's just funny how he's went from that, you know, bit part on Parks and Rec to now he's like the biggest action star. It's pretty neat. I mean, he seems like a decent dude too, which is cool. But
well,
Drew, have a good night. Get well soon, man.
Yeah, man. All enjoy right. The matzo ball soup, man.
Bye, guys.
Goodbye. So, Adam, Parenthood, last year at Dad 2.0 Summit, which is coming up real soon for me. Are you going, by the way?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Oh, cool. So, were you there last year, and Jason Katniss, the talked about Parenthood. Up to that point, I had never seen it, which is kind of weird because I love a lot of people in it. Peter Krause was in Sports Night, which is one of my favorite television shows ever, going back many years. And I just never invested the time into it. And after hearing him talk, him and Jim Higley on stage, and watching the clips from it, it was just absolutely amazing. And so I came back from Dad 2.0 and just started binge watching it, which it's a hard show to binge watch. Oh, my God. Not only is it an hour, it's a full emotional hour.
It's an emotional hour. That's right. Yeah,
and so I was watching like 3 or 4 a day, and I'm just like, I'm crying, I'm laughing, I'm just in by myself with my cats. I mean, it wasn't pretty. I'm not gonna lie to you. It was not a pretty scene. But I bailed on it. I got like three seasons in, and there was a
the cancer episodes. Those were intense.
Did I get that far?
Yeah. Season three is when she started getting sick, and that was what changed.
Okay.
I think that what threw a lot of people off of the show was that like you're watching the family dynamics. You're like, oh, this is really cool, and then you're kind of like, oh, okay. This is kind of like life, and you know, relationships happen with the kids, and the kids' drama, and the adoption, and you're like, all right, I'm with you, and then you give one of the leading characters cancer.
Wait, see, no, wait, I don't know if I could. Maybe I only got to the end of season two. So Michael B. Jordan, when he came on as Peter Krause's daughter's boyfriend at the shelter, that's a while ago. I know.
Yeah, that's like season two. Yeah,
okay. He's awesome. Like, I love that guy. Yeah.
The fact that he's not in more things now,
seriously,
I'm blown away by. But I think he's going to be the guy that we're going to be talking about for 10 years, 20 years.
I hope so.
He's an amazing, amazing actor and super nice. Anytime you hear him on an interview or
see
a press clipping of him, he just seems like he goes out of his way for people. He doesn't seem.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So, but when he came on, it was a great character and it was such an interesting dynamic. But then I didn't watch, and I still don't actually know what happened. I mean, I know he's wasn't on the show much longer.
Yeah. Well, then you know, the daughter went off to college, and then the daughter came back from college for a few episodes, and the daughter hasn't been around at all.
Oh, really?
At all this season. Like, I think she might come back tonight for tonight's series finale. But, they had some interesting things, and it's definitely worth watching. But season three, they gave one of the main characters cancer, and I think that is what did the show in. I think people want to have an escape from life, and they want to see a family that they could look at and be like, oh, that kind of reminds me of ours. Oh, that's funny. That's cool. They have some drama, the ups and downs of the emotions. But no one wants to sit there and be like, yo, this is what our aunt's going through, and this is tearing up our family. This is heartbreaking for us. And you don't want to see that on TV, no less to have them kind of come out of it and be like perfectly perfect the next week. And you're just like, what? How did that? No, my aunt is not okay. And like, you know, this person's not okay. And this person isn't here anymore because of this killer. And so then you make her get into remission, and like she looks perfect the next week. And that's the acting. And she was up for a Golden Globe for it last year. But I don't know. To me, it just that kind of put it in perspective where I used to be watching it live, and now I'm watching it on the DVR just because I was like, yeah, I'll get to it when I'm in an emotional state. But yeah, I think that, you know, definitely a show that is worth watching. I think if you haven't seen Rescue Me, that's got to be on one of either Hulu, Netflix, or Amazon. And to me, that is the most amazing show for the first four or five seasons. And then it kind of flies off the handle. Once they keep going deeper into the psychosis of, you know, the firemen and the drugs and the alcohol and that stuff.
Oh, okay.
It kind of flies off the handle at season four or five.
That's Dennis Leary, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm telling you, it changed. Like, this should be required watching for anyone that lives in a city and that doesn't appreciate what the firemen do. Cause, like,
oh, really?
Yeah. It's the first several seasons are so great. And it really takes off from 9/11. And that's what it was kind of memorializing.
Okay.
The first season is like recuperating after all the guys are gone after 9/11. It's about a firehouse in New York and about the personalities. And it's just an amazing show to watch and catch up on if you need a good, you know, snow day binge watch.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Did you ever see Life, Book of Life?
The movie? Yes. Yeah. I've seen all, well, not the Academy Awards because they threw a curveball with the other two, but all, I guess, the Golden Globe ones, the five.
Yeah, right. The mainstream five as opposed to
the... Yeah, and I mean, the other ones look lovely, and I saw, and to that extent, you know, I saw Ernest and Celestine, which was nominated last year when Frozen won, and that was terrific. I mean, small, obscure stuff, that's a great story, I'm all about. But that any of that would have been nominated over, I don't even care how good it is, that would have been nominated over the Lego movie. It's just absolute lunacy. I'm not even like a Lego nerd, but that movie is incredible.
Right, and the fact that they already have two spinoffs from it planned and like in development already from Warner Brothers, it is kind of silly.
But Book of Life was my least favorite of... I was... it's beautiful. There were parts of the story that just really aggravated me. Channing Tatum's character, it was a little aggravating. Why? What did you have about that?
The DVD count came out yesterday during the snow day, which, you know, if you couldn't get to a store, like in many in New York, you couldn't get it, but it's now out today, and it's been out on digital download for a while. But it is, my son came out saying it's a great movie and he liked it.
Yeah, we saw it in the theater.
He didn't have the same reaction when he came out, when he got done watching Box Trolls. Oh. He immediately went into make a Box Troll mode. Made a Box Troll.
Yeah, we just got the DVD. I did a sponsored post for it. We saw that in the theaters. From the minute I saw the previews for Box Trolls, I mean, again, just thoroughly original looking. And my God, it's just such a work of art. And it took a decade to make it, and it's just so beautiful, and the story is so interesting, and Ben Kingsley's voice as did you watch it with him?
I did watch it, and I thought it was phenomenal. I thought, what a great piece of artwork.
Archibald Snatcher, Ben Kingsley, it's just a masterpiece. It really is. I actually still would pick, I hope it wins, now that Lego isn't involved. I'm hoping that, because Box Trolls is nominated, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I would actually still say Lego Movie would have said that should win, but now that it's not involved and can't win, I would say I'm totally rooting for the Box Trolls. It's remarkable, just absolutely remarkable. And watching all the bonus features, talking about process, how they made it, the dance scene, the bonus features on that DVD, I really can't recommend picking up a copy of that enough. It's awesome.
Yeah, really. To me, it looked incredible how they did it. I think anything that involves claymation that you're working 10, 15 years on is just incredible. Like this whole George Lucas movie, the Strange Magic, it really, you know, 15 years in the making. And you know, reading some of the reviews on it is like, would I see that or Paddington? I'd still go to Paddington, and I'll be very upfront about that. But knowing the passion that George Lucas had to make it, and it got made, and I think you could always talk about how it could be made better, and I think this was too much George Lucas at some point. And I think, yes, you could have too much Lucas if you look at the Star Wars 1, 2, and 3. It was too much Lucas. Not enough, like, asking for input of, like, hey, guys, does this make sense? Or we're going to introduce a character named Jar Jar. But I think it worked. I think my son loved it in terms of the music that it provided. And he turned to me and goes, oh, that's that cheesy music you listen to in the car, because I listen to a lot of classic rock in the car.
Yeah, but it got hammered, though.
Oh, yeah. It got hammered. But you know what?
We have not seen it yet. We haven't seen Paddington yet either. With and other stuff, we have not gotten out to the movies.
I will say this, is that Strange Magic is a kid's movie. And if you are rating movies as an adult, as if I enjoyed it as an adult, of course it's going to get panned. But if you rate it as, did my kid enjoy it, that's what matters in a kid's movie. And I, once again, came out of it with a kid that enjoyed the movie Strange Magic. So,
okay.
You know, and he's a 6.5-year-old boy. So I'm sure that if you have a tween daughter, if you have a daughter that loves fairies, if you have a little, little kind of tomboy daughter, you know, those people are going to really identify with this. Those daughters that are kind of a little bit more rough and tumble and play with swords. And,
right.
Because they're going to sit there and not be like, oh, a foo-foo fairy. It's going to be like, oh, this fairy can wield a sword, and you know,
a little badass fairy. It'll probably, at this point, since we haven't even seen Paddington yet, it'll probably be a rental. We're at the point where probably not going to head out to the theater. We're going on vacation in a little bit, because we're taking a week's vacation in San Fran before Dad 2.0, and then my family's leaving and I'm going to stay out for that weekend. But I just saw Whiplash yesterday.
Oh, don't. I can't talk about this yet. This is something that Suzanne really wants to see. I've been.
I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just going to tell you, it's the best movie of the year. It might be the best movie I've ever seen, or at least the best movie I've seen in the last five.
Wow.
My heart. Now you have to be a certain kind of person to probably have that reaction. I mean, you have to love music and art and process. And it helps if you like jazz. But it is remarkable. My heart was, I felt like I should have taken an extra dose of blood pressure medicine when I came out of it, because the way it ends, it's so visceral, and it's the kind of movie that I wish I saw it with someone. I was trying to call my wife and I went on to Lauren Jaffe, who loved the movie and has been encouraging me to go see it, and I finally did. Like, I just want to talk about it. There's so many things that I posted on Facebook, like, is there going to, at Dad 2.0, is there going to be some sort of, like, Whiplash support / discussion group that we can just, like, have a breakout session to talk about what the impact, it's because it's sort of a parent, it's not a parenting movie, but it the themes from it as far as motivation and how to inspire someone to greatness and how not to, it's so remarkable, Adam. I don't buy many movies. I'm not a big movie rewatcher. I will buy that the day it comes out because it's remarkable. And it is rewatchable.
I know that's something that was on Suzanne's shortlist that she wanted to see. We just got done watching Nightcrawler the other day.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it.
I thought Jake Gyllenhaal did an incredible job. I think, to me, I don't understand how that stuff isn't illegal. I think it was all highly illegal.
But, seriously.
I get it. I think it's very much what's going on in L.A. and paparazzi and that whole movement of, like, you know, we're there before the law, so we create the laws.
It was, I mean, he's incredible, right?
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
the whole movie was just, it's sickening because you're watching it and you're like, oh, this is what happens every day. Oh.
Right.
But you're like, oh, you can't turn away from it.
It's an uncomfortable film in that way. Like, it really is. Yeah. His character, I don't know the last time there's been such a morally bankrupt personality
I don't think he had the morals to it. I think there was something, whether it was like, you know, a spectrum-y kind of thing where he was just like very logical and very much like, this is what I gotta do for a living. This is what I gotta do. So this is what I'm doing.
Do you think so? I don't know. I thought there was more logic to it. I felt like there was more, like he was, in the beginning he seemed like that, but then towards the end when he was playing her at dinner, like to have a relationship with her, that seemed that didn't seem what you're talking about. Right. That definitely seemed like he was making a conscious choice to blackmail, to play this off.
Right, probably.
But it was terrific. Well, I don't know if that's nominated just from an art direction. I mean, what a gorgeous looking film, too.
Oh yeah, the shoot was great.
All over LA.
Yeah, I think it was fantastically done. But that's a movie that makes you uncomfortable, and I think it also talks about why I have an uncomfortability with the news. Which is also why, like, I've started watching more of this entertainment news and hardcore news in the morning, because I don't want to see the body count. I don't want to see what's going on. I want to see, like, I want to see Matt Lauer interviewing Lady Gaga, and then I don't want to look at Twitter about how he's a sexist, because I gotta tell you, like, I like Matt Lauer. If I could emulate someone's life in my life, other than waking up at 4 a.m. every day for decades, you know, he's a guy to me that, like, you know, whatever's going on in the personal life, I still look at him and like, yeah, you know, that's a guy that I could look at and be like, yeah, he's a good guy. Probably not at all, but I think, you know, him and Al have like that chemistry that I've always like wanted in a best friend. Just be like, hey, like bosom buddies kind of looking. I don't know. It's a lot like that. And then what was the other, there was another movie that we checked out recently, and I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but I gotta tell you, for me, it's looking more and more like if Selma got snubbed, it's going to be more and more like Birdman's year, and I wasn't that impressed with Birdman. When I come to think about how self-indulgent it is, I think Michael Keaton did a great job acting, but it holds no water when you compare it to The Imitation Game or What is it? Something About Everything, right? What is it?
The Theory of Everything.
Yeah, The Theory of Everything. Mm-hmm. To me, like, it's Michael Keaton versus that guy, and I love Michael Keaton. I would love to see him get it for his decades of service to the industry, and if he does get it, that's why he's getting it, because it's Michael Keaton. He's done 40 years of movies, but not because he's, you know, it was a good performance, but not nearly as good as, you know, what he did in The Theory of Everything. And I will say that Cumberbatch in that other movie, in The Imitation Game.
Oh, yeah.
My goodness, what a great movie. If you haven't seen The Imitation Game...
Oh, I saw it. Yeah, I went to see it. He's a terrific actor. But, you know, Birdman's interesting. I liked it a lot, but I didn't love it. I wanted to. I went in. I love Emma Stone. Ed Norton is one of the top 10 actors of our generation. I think he's remarkable in everything.
I think as a supporting actor, Ed Norton gets it. To me, there's no other supporting actor that did good a...
He doesn't have a chance. He doesn't really? Have... well, because the guy from Whiplash, J.K. Simmons, is up. Even though he's sort of the star of it, he's up for Best Supporting Actor. And it's a... from what I've heard, it's not even... It won't even be close. I mean, it's his award. And once you see it, you'll know that is 100% deserved. As good as Ed Norton was in Birdman, J.K. Simmons blows the roof off of any acting performance. He's insanely good.
Oh, yeah, if you tell me.
You have to, honestly, just stop what you're doing right now and go watch that with your wife. It's, I get moved by film a lot. I can't remember the last time I've had a reaction like to that I just wanted to call everyone. I wanted to just go back in and see it again.
Wow.
It's amazing. It's really amazing. And there's various reasons for that. And I can't really talk about them until you see it. I see a lot of myself in both characters. It's really a two-person. It almost could be a play. It's really a two-person movie. I see a lot of myself in both characters, and it's a little haunting. It's amazing. But yeah, it's a great year. I mean, the entertainment-wise, film and TV. In my lifetime, since I've been paying attention, I can't remember a time that both have been just kind of hitting on all cylinders.
Did you get to see American Sniper yet?
I have not.
Okay, so you really need to see that and tell me if that's Bradley Cooper's win. Once again, it's a mixed emotion because it's like it is so patriotic and it's so like it could be so overdone. It could be like Clint Eastwood's best work ever, or it could also be seen as total like vacant patriotism of like rah rah, we killed
right.
This guy, and this guy was a homicidal maniac, but like yay. But I don't know. There's something that the reports are so clouded about it, but you just sit there and you just see like you see the real photos from his funeral, and you hear the stories from them saying like SEALs have never seen more SEALs in a casket than that guy, and so to them he was something of a hero, and so maybe he really is an American hero. He certainly was to the SEALs, and I look at it and I just say like that was such a great performance by Bradley Cooper.
It looks like it, and I love him, and I'll see it someday for him. I have some problems with Clint Eastwood. I have some problems with a lot of the stuff behind that movie and the reaction to it. Sometimes I have a hard time separating the people who take something and co-opt it into hate or violence, and I have a hard time separating that from the actual art itself, and wanting to support that myself, like wanting to go and plunk money down or go spend 2 hours. But I know his performance is worth doing it, if only for that, from an acting standpoint. So I will see that at some point. I don't know if I'm ready. I'm not a big war movie guy anyway, but I will at some point see that. Yeah.
All right, man. I think we did a great job covering what's coming up in entertainment movies, and we definitely kicked off a little bit of toys as Toy Fair kind of approaches.
And I'm not going to be there. I'm turning down invitations to Lego and Hasbro all week. I'm sending I can't believe I booked a family vacation.
Wait, you got a Lego invite? I didn't get a Lego invite. You might have to forward that one over.
It's funny. I will, because I thought Drew needed an introduction, and so I actually responded saying, hey, I didn't name names, I just said, can I send somebody else in who's going to be there covering it for his own site and mine? But I wrote him tonight and told him that, and he said that he's already got it in the works, so he doesn't need my help. So if they write me back and are cool with it, then you can be by proxy at the Lego booth.
All right, we'll see how that goes. Anyway, man, it was great talking with you. Once again, awesome podcast as we kick off another week. And look forward to seeing you guys soon at dad.fm.
Bye-bye.